stopped on Friday, and I start having me a ball. Cause I got a good feeling, and I don't feel no pain at all. Friday in my day.
Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, I think Monday, starting Monday, we're going to be on station in Dallas-Fort Worth. How about that? Tonight, joining us at the bottom of the hour will be a woman named Sam Simpson. Sam is her first name. Sam Simpson. Say that about 10 times real fast. She's running in the 10th District in Florida, which is on Florida's West Coast, against a Republican there, Bill Young. So we're going to have her on for a few minutes like we had Nancy Skinner on last night. Also, we have some of Spewing Spinderella to share. Too Much Cappuccino Perino previews what we all hope will be Bush's final State of the Union speech Monday night. We got a few clips from Lava Lips on that one. And finally, some clips from the Republican debate last night. Thanks to our associate producer, Ian Huff, you'll hear the Republican candidates answer the question of the consequences of Bush's war in Iraq. Oh, my God. So can you handle all of this? Plus emails and phone calls and stuff like that. All right. Here's a little, I don't know, is this breaking news? When did this happen? Today, some point. If you were hoping for a special prosecutor to investigate whether the CIA broke the law when it destroyed those videotapes of people being tortured, forget about it. Attorney General Michael McCasey said today, it ain't going to happen. No special prosecutor. Eh, screw you. Now let's see, McCasey, he's the one that Chuck Schumer, Democrat, suggested for Attorney General, right? Chuck Schumer is either really a Republican or the dumbest bastard in the Senate. Well, what am I saying? He's a Democrat. That explains a lot. Never mind. McCasey had a briefing with reporters today that for some reason the Associated Press timed down to the minute. They called it a 41-minute briefing. He also ducked repeated questions, McCasey did, about whether he considers waterboarding a form of torture. he just won't answer, will he? He's going to be asked that again when he appears next week before the Senate Judiciary Committee. This is the way the AP reports it. Speaking tersely and in an even low tone, McCasey would not discuss whether he has seen any evidence that destroying the interrogation tapes violated court orders or otherwise interfered with any case. He said the ongoing criminal investigation was opened on grounds of, quote, some indication, end quote, which is a lot less than probable cause, some indication that there might have been, possibly, could be any violation of any federal statute. Ask if he has reconsidered his decision not to put a special prosecutor in charge. McCasey said simply, no, no. He was also even more reluctant, to discuss waterboarding. Still, what's with this guy? Well, obviously, what's with him? He's protecting people in the Bush crime family. Once he identifies it as torture, then Bush, Cheney, Wolfowitz, Abrams, the rest of these pigs become eligible for prosecution. So, of course, he's going to keep avoiding the question. But when asked again about waterboarding, McCasey said today, I understand there's interest in that. I am going to review that practice and offer the view of whether the current program is lawful or not. See how he avoids the question? See? He then said today, that's what I said I would do, and I can't say any more, and I won't say any more. And he immediately then raised his middle finger to the assembled press and uttered an epithet. No, I just added that part. Never mind. He also refused to say whether he has completed his review or if he would ever publicly announce his opinion on whether waterboarding is legal. Forget the torture aspect. Is it legal, Your Honor?
Used during the Spanish Inquisition, waterboarding involves pouring water down a person's cloth-covered throat to create the sensation of drowning. And McCasey
looked at his watch and said, listen, I got to go. I've got a luncheon date, and I still have to go to the bathroom. And with that, the press briefing ended at exactly 41 minutes. Chuck Schumer's boy. Way to go, Chuck. How many times have you heard the checks in the mail? And you knew right away it was a lie, right? Have you heard now about Bush's economic stimulus? Well, Bush and the Democratic Party's leadership economic stimulus plan. What's going to happen to that? You see, it's all being done right at the time when I don't know what 100 million taxpayers are going to be filing their tax returns, and this has got to come from the IRS. So the plan to send these chump-ass payments to 117 million households to stimulate the economy is going to impose major strains on the Internal Revenue Service, delays in answering calls to the agency, and a host of technical problems that will determine who ultimately collects the benefits. That's according to IRS officials. They said yesterday. This deal, this tossing a few bucks at the great unwashed masses in America that was worked out between the criminals in the White House and the criminals that lead the Democratic Party, the deal calls for checks to be issued 60 days after Bush signs the law authorizing these payments. That may be in as few as 4 or 5 weeks when he signs it. So in theory, the first checks would come in early May. Except for the fact that if you apply Murphy's Law here, if something can go wrong, it will. And think about it for a second. Now, according to David Johnson writing the Times, even as the negotiators crunched the numbers, the Congressional Joint Committee on Taxation warned that the tax filing season could be disrupted and hinted that it might be June before checks were issued. Oh, really? A member of the Congressional Joint Committee said IRS computers and other systems, quote, are fully engaged today in processing 2007 tax returns. As a result, it's not practical to contemplate distributing cash rebates until the peak filing season is completed, which in the past years has been the very end of May. Now, the size of the checks will also depend on incomes and other factors. Have you seen this rebate program? For example, individuals would not qualify for the $300 payment if they earned less than $3,000. Now, that makes sense, doesn't it? Unless, that is, they pay taxes on unearned income like pensions and interest. Then they will, or something. Also, according to Johnson, many people who owe no income tax will receive checks. None will be sent to people who pay their taxes through withholding but do not file returns because the withholding tables typically collect slightly more tax than is owed. These non-filers are seldom pursued. Now, determining... Are you following me? You still with me? I think half the audience went home, Kathy. Determining who is eligible and for how much money will require major reprogramming of an outdated IRS computer system that relies on technology abandoned long ago by businesses. The software changes will have to be made as an estimated 135 million individual income tax returns arrive between now and April 15th. Isn't this so typically Republican? Isn't this so typically Bush? And isn't this so typically Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid? They don't know what the hell they're doing. That's it. They're not venal, evil bastards. They're just totally corrupt. They don't know what they're doing. Nobody has authorized the IRS to hire extra workers, to reprogram the computers, to enter new data, to issue checks, or to answer calls. So how are they going to handle all this? Well, the IRS will divert resources from serving taxpayers who are trying to pay their bill, like you and I, and no more, for the time being, enforcing tax laws. Maybe that's a good thing, huh? It's astonishing, isn't it? So, you, on the one hand, you've got $1,800 refund coming from the taxes that were withheld, and you won't get that because they're going to be busy figuring out how to get you your $600 tax rebate. You see how that works?
Washington, we're now determining the size and the shape of a package. It's not if we have a package, it's how big will the package be.
Oh, yeah, okay. 21 past the hour. News from the Great White North. The Canadian military has secretly stopped transferring prisoners to Afghanistan's government. They did this a couple of months ago. This was after they had secretly stopped transferring prisoners to the United States military. Because apparently the government of Afghanistan, you know, tortures. The suspension began November 5th, and it was disclosed in a fax sent by government lawyers in Canada to Amnesty International and the British Columbia Civil Liberties Association, both of whom are seeking to block any further prisoner transfers. So the Canadian government said, we already stopped. The government's internal concerns apparently about detainees is also at odds with Canadian officials' repeated public statements that the Afghan government, honestly, promise, cross my heart and hope to die, does not engage in systematic torture. No, 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 no. Now, that's what Canadian officials said. They sound like American officials. Wait a second. I thought we were going to emigrate there eventually, Kathy. Well, I guess not. Alex Neeb, the head of Amnesty International's Canadian branch, said, quote, "The denials by the Canadians and political posturing and name-calling that have gone on over this at various points is very disheartening when all along there's been this information from November 5th that they had stopped, the Canadian government has stopped.
Until the end of 2005, Canada turned over prisoners it detained in Afghanistan to the United States military. After that practice led to objections in Canada, began transferring prisoners to the Afghan government. Since last May, Canadian diplomats have been allowed access to Afghan prisons to interview prisoners who were originally detained by Canadian troops.
And a series of secret emailed reports from those Canadian monitors led to the suspension of handing people over to the Afghan government because the heavily censored versions of the emails were provided last week to rights groups in Canada as a result of this legal action. And even though they were heavily censored, the reports showed that the monitors, Canadian monitors, found that detainees had been beaten and tortured. In one report, the monitors said one prisoner told them he had been beaten with cables and wires, received electric shocks, scars on his legs from the beating. Another detainee who said he was beaten, who had signs of injury, told the diplomatic visitors to look under a chair in the room in which they were meeting. And the monitors, the Canadians, said, "We looked under the chair and we found a large piece of braided electrical cable as well as rubber hoses." Christ. Well, what are the Canadians going to do now? For heaven's sake, they certainly can't give their prisoners to the U.S. They can't give their prisoners to Afghanistan. Maybe they can sell them. Maybe they can auction them. If nobody was paying any attention, I wasn't, because I knew it would happen anyway. The Bush's second veto of the child insurance plan, the CHIP, S-CHIP program, State Children's Health Insurance Program, was not overridden in the House on Wednesday. An attempt was made. The 260 to 152 vote left backers of the legislation about 15 votes short of the two-thirds majority necessary to override Bush's veto from back on December 12th. 42 Republicans supported the override attempt. They must all be up for re-election, which was two fewer than in the previous effort to reject Bush's earlier version, earlier veto for an earlier version of the bill. So get this, 152 members of the United States House of Representatives would like to see children sick, sicker, and dead. 152. How can you evil sons of bitches do that? I bet you you're very pro-fetus, but what about children? I bet you're very pro-blastocyst. I bet you would bust your asses to get contraceptives removed from the shelves of pharmacies, but when it comes to children's health care,
You filthy scum, 152 of you, vote against children. How many of you are Christian? How many are Jewish? How many are Muslim? I think there's only one. Are there any Muslims in the House? I don't even know. How does this 152 look in the mirror in the morning?
Boy, I got rid of that goddamn child health care plan, didn't I? Ha ha! Little bastards!
Is that what they say? Or do they say, well, you know, Maude, I had a very tough decision today. I had to vote either to not override Bush's veto of the children's health care plan or vote for more money for war and death and destruction in Iraq. And, you know, I'm a Republican. I'm a conservative. I voted for the death and destruction, obviously. You know, what are you going to do? These are times that try men's souls. Huh? Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people? Oh, my God. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
I can't drive on the left side of the road. This is a hard life. It's a hard life. Very hard life. Hard life wherever you go. And if we poison our children with hate, in the hard life, it's all that we'll go. And there ain't no place in this world for these kids to go. It's a hard life.
Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. Sam Simpson, Sam with two M's, is running for Congress in Florida's 10th District. She's running against a Republican. There's the surprise. And we've had her on a couple of times on the program. She's running against Representative Bill Young in the 10th District in Florida. And Sam joins us now from Dunedin, which is on the west coast of Florida, not too far from St. Pete and Clearwater and Tarpon Springs and all those nice places. How you doing, Sam? How's the campaign going?
Well, Mike, you know, we're still rolling along. And first of all, I just want to say thanks to Ian, Kathy, and yourself for what you're doing. And you know what, Mike? We're really doing this for, you know, Molly and her generation.
I mean, that's what
we're fighting for.
I hear that loud and clear. The campaign season, of course, is just eating Florida alive. When are you all having your presidential primary?
Well, it's going to be next Tuesday, and actually that's kind of been a hindrance because so many people are so engaged in, you know, the presidential Democratic primary that they haven't really concentrated so much in the congressional thing. So many of my volunteers are, you know, out and about doing that. So hopefully after Tuesday, that's when we'll really start to get engaged and go full forward.
How has it been going in terms of your getting your message out, going to forums and meetings and talking to the public?
Well, you know, that is we're just getting started with that. And I got to tell you, I'm going to go speak to like 300 nurses next Tuesday. And since I talked to you last, I've been doing a lot of reading, like we all do. You're so good at keeping up with every day, and sometimes that's hard for us out here trying to keep track of a thousand things. And what I'm really discovering is, you know, the Rockefeller Foundation behind the genetic food, behind the eugenics, behind the education system. And sometimes, Mike, I feel like I have this sort of graceful understanding of the onslaught of the evil that's coming upon our country, and everything is bigger than healthcare. You know, it's bigger than Bush. It's the things that are happening. Everybody's getting hit from every side, and somehow I want to be able to quantify things, not to scare people, but to allow people to maintain their hope, to find their power, and to really find something that they can focus on, whether it's, you know, the food, the war, the education, the health care, the veterans, you know, these kinds of things. So I'm really struggling with, you know, what is it that I say to the, I'm not going to be saying the same thing all the time, you know, like, okay, do this, do this. Plus, you know, each house, we each owe $500,000 for the economy's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's a very good point. I've talked on this program quite a bit about the overwhelming nature of the problems that the Republicans have forced on us in the past 15 years, but especially the past seven, with these maniacs in the White House, and how to get a handle on it. It's sometimes overwhelming, and I think an awful lot of people just want to duck and cover. It's like the old days when you were waiting for the nuclear bombs to fall. Just duck and cover. Leave me alone. I can't separate all these issues, foreign and domestic, and spying and phone calls and fraud and the housing market and Iraq and Iran. That's a very good point. How do you break it down for voters to, and I'm just saying this is the rhetorical question, how do you break it down for voters like me to get a handle on it?
Well, people ask me, for example, who do you support for president, right? Mm-hmm. And I've gotten to the point where I'm going to support somebody who follows the rule of law, okay?
Yeah.
And I don't really feel that, like, the presidency is really, I wonder if it's going to make much of a difference,
mm-hmm.
no matter who it is. And I'm thinking to myself, you know where the power is going to have to come back? It's going to have to come back in Congress.
There you go.
It's going to have to come back in the people.
That's right.
And if we just can, if people can just main, if, number one, let's hope we have an election and there's not some kind of false flag event and they're going to mm-hmm. declare martial law, all mm-hmm. right? Which, anything's possible, Mike.
Sure.
Anything's
is.
Possible. One of the things that I'm actually doing and encouraging people to do here in Dunedin, we're growing food. We're putting away, you know, peanut butter and honey, these kinds of things. We're trying to prepare ourselves for just about anything that can happen, but at the same time, develop networks of people who we know we can trust and tell the truth. And I really think that the American people are so distraught, like you said, I think they just want somebody to stand up and tell the truth and who's not afraid. And we just have to show them we're not afraid, like you do every night on your radio station.
Well, more or less. You know, that's something else. Of course, this is Democratic Party apostasy, what I'm about to say. But I have said it on the program that given what the Republicans have done to this country and the problems that are facing the next president and vice president and cabinet, it almost makes me think, well, let a Republican to be president as long as you pointed out, the House and the Senate, where the power should reside,
yes.
as long as the House and the Senate were veto-proof Democrat.
Yes.
Then the agendas could still be passed, progressive legislation would still happen,
yes.
And let the Republicans sit in the White House and take the blame, the responsibility for what they've done. Now, you know, immediately I think to myself, well, yeah, but on the other hand, the president is the commander-in-chief. The president does have certain executive powers that the Congress can't tamper with, so that's probably not a good idea. But I know what you're talking about.
It's the idea of the people regaining their voice and the people regaining their power and simply not allowing the psychological operations against our mind and against our heart to put us into despair, because once that happens, they've won.
Mm-hmm.
And we really, really do have the power. I got to tell you, I do see where we take all our cars into a big, huge recycling agency, and we take the copper and the steel, and we rebuild industry, and we have hydrogen cars, you know. I mean, I do see where we have sustainable living. If it's going to take some kind of a heinous collapse, like my dad lived in the 1929 Depression.
Right.
He used to talk about it all the time. And the idea of them giving a tax, the idea of them giving a rebate to people, you know, which we're going to have to pay five times over in debt to pay for, because they're the ones that caused part of these problems. I mean, they're the ones, put these people in jail that did these vulture lending practices.
There you go.
You know, so they're bailing themselves out, Mike.
Isn't that a slap in the face to say, here's $500-$600 now, run out to Walmart or Target and buy some Chinese-made products.
That's another thing that we're actually encouraging people to do, you know, because two-thirds of gross domestic product is consumer spending.
Right.
We're telling people, buy less, eat less.
I know.
You know, start walking, ride a bike. I mean, there are all things that we can do to kind of shrink our world a little bit.
What kind of response to that message do you get? I'm familiar with your neck of the woods, that 10th district. I'm very familiar with that area. There's a lot of working class white folks. There's a lot of retirees. There are some minorities, not a whole lot, if I remember that area.
Not in my district. It's gerrymandered, remember?
Right. Right, that's right. That's very true. So you have a lot of retirees, and you also have a lot of working class young whites who are really struggling. Dunedin is not, you know, it's a nice vacation destination, but it's not known for its heavy industry. As a matter of fact, I don't think you have any.
Not in Dunedin, but we do have a lot of mixed industry in Pinellas County. We have Lockheed Martin. We've got Raytheon.
Okay.
We've got Raymond James, which is a financial firm. We've got Jabil. There is some manufacturing, that sort of thing. But, you know, most of the jobs in the last year or so, they're waitress jobs.
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, the kind of jobs that are being created in this kind of economy, they're service jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here I am trying, you know, I can't find a job myself, you know. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and there's a lot
of people. You're self-employed. I mean,
yes. But I'm self-employed, but in the terms of if I was in the marketplace and I was going to go out and look for a job, I couldn't find one.
Well, now, here's something interesting. If you're the type of Democrat that I think you are from reading your website, you are certainly anti-war. You are certainly against the military-industrial complex.
Yes.
And yet you named two corporations, Raytheon and Lockheed Martin, in your district, or at least in Pinellas County,
that
are absolute purveyors of death and destruction. How do you get workers at those two companies to vote for you?
Well, I don't think they will. You know, I don't think they will. And that's not actually who I can go after.
Uh-huh.
You know, I've got to go after the folks that are worried, upset, concerned, and want to hear the truth and want to know the truth. And I see a time where, you know, we transform these nuclear trigger weapons into solar energy panel discussions. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, all it is, Mike, it's leadership. This is not rocket science. It's common sense. Do you want nuclear weapons in space? Do you want 737 military bases in 130 countries, or do you want to feed your grandchildren?
Right.
I mean, it's you know, Congress was never meant to be a 40-year career. You know, Mr. Young, Congressman Young, you know what he said his reason was for running again for the 20th time?
No, what?
He said, because when we win in Iraq, we're going to need to rebuild our military, and that's my job.
Oh, these people are just so sick.
Oh, my God.
I can't. Both clauses in that statement are just patently untrue.
Absolutely.
Both of them.
I wrote back. I said, of course, they didn't print it, but it's on my website, by the way, my real response to the St. Petersburg Times. If people go to samsimpsonforcongress.com. They can read my real response, because I said, you know, there's no win when 1 million people are dead, 4 million don't have homes, and we got, you know, 6,000 suicides for veterans. Mm-hmm. There's no win. This is no win. There is no win.
Right. Hold on. Let me put you on hold for
sure.
A second. I got to do a break, and we'll come back. You know, the Republican Party I can't even get my mind around it when they say when we win this war, we'll rebuild the military. The Republican Party has always been about destroying the military, absolutely destroying it, because most Republicans in Congress were draft dodgers or draft evaders. The mere thought of the military gives them the cold shivers, and all they want to do is see it just go away, like Social Security, like health care, like this, like that.
Each time you listen to Right Wing Radio, God kills a kitten.
Oh, no. 10 before the hour, we're talking with Sam Simpson. Sam, S-A-M-M, Simpson, forcongress.com is her website. She's running in Florida's 10th against entrenched Republican Bill Young. So if you... if you would be so kind, go to her website, Sam with two M's, samsimpsonforcongress.com. Check out what her position is on these various issues. And if you feel that this is the kind of Democrat that you would rather have in Congress than some of the current crop of Democrats, and certainly the kind of representative you would like to have rather than any Republican, support her. I forget, Sam, the last time we talked, how deeply we got into the issues. But you live in an area that also, if I remember correctly, has a lot of retired military. What is your position on the wars that Bush has taken us into, and the ones that he, if he had another term, would probably take us into even further?
Well, I've actually heard that we've got boots on the ground in Pakistan right now and boots on the ground in Iran.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, this is not fun. We have one of the largest contingencies of veterans in the United States. We have in Tampa, which is not in my district, at the Haley Hospital, where they bring mm-hmm. some of the most wounded. And then we have in St. Petersburg, Bay Pines. There are a lot of military around that support Mr. Bush. There are a lot of veterans that do not. Mm-hmm. There are veterans that understand that this is an illegal, immoral, unjust war, and the first call of the military is to defend and uphold the Constitution of the United States. Mm-hmm. We also have veterans that have guns and understand revolution is possible. Not that they want that kind of a revolution, but we do have some wide awake people down here.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, look at our veterans. Look what they do with depleted uranium. Look what they do with Agent Orange. Look how they put vaccines in these people. Look how they don't. They love the veteran. They love the soldier. They hate the veteran.
That's
They've
true.
Got military in every high school, you know, in America, because the No Child Left Behind, doesn't that have a nice ring, Mike? The No Child Left Behind, which is a, I would have to say, eugenically designed program. But the No Child Left Behind, which has the military getting the names, address, phone numbers,
right,
and records of every kid in America in public school.
Mm-hmm.
We have a Veterans for Peace down here. I want to give him props, Dwight Lawton.
Mm-hmm.
Dwight took 3.5 years going in front of the school board, and now Veterans for Peace are now allowed to go into the high schools to offer alternatives to kids.
Well, that's unusual, because in so many areas, veterans or peace groups are absolutely denied admission to, because the school boards will say, well, that's political.
It took him 3 years.
3 years.
It took him 3 years, and I go over to Dunedin High School with another friend of mine, another Vets for Peace, and we have found that they're targeting young white racists.
Huh.
In our experience. 16-year-old kids who want to kill Muslims. It's a tragedy. But yet, we're also finding out that there are kids that know what's up. There mm-hmm. are kids that know what's up. So it's a mixed bag down here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got people on... I was called... I saw a Christian friend of mine the other day in the grocery store, and I happened to be of the Christian worldview. And she told me that I was deceived. And I suggested to her that she look at the physical reality of the historical evidence, you know, not float around in some spiritual concave of what you think the end times are, you know.
Tell her to read the Sermon on the Mount.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. it was so neat, because I had an atheist friend of mine. Someone was said, oh my God, is she a Christian? You can't support her. And my atheist friend said, but she's a new test. She believes in mercy and compassion and feeding the hungry.
Mm.
You know? So it was so funny to be supported by an atheist. But our Constitution, unlike Mike Huckabee, says you can believe what you want.
Right.
You have to have the right to do that. And I believe that we should, number one, give people back their power, give them facts, and also tell them to get to know their neighbors, put a little peanut butter and honey away, grow a garden, do with less, and get ready, because we really don't know what's going
to
happen.
You know, one of the reasons I like talking to you is because you're just so damn enthusiastic. I mean, you just. I hope you're this way when you're out in public. When you start going now to these PTA meetings and these lodge meetings and these veteran groups, Sam, just talk with them the way you talk on this program, and they will just jump up and start applauding you and reaching for their wallets. I swear to God they will, because you really are. You have a great enthusiasm. That is very catching. I just get so tired of hearing politicians or would-be politicians who just say, well, you know, we've got to take care of these problems. Because, you know, I'd much rather listen to somebody like you. When you do give your talks, do you hop around the stage? You got to do that. You got to move a lot. Just move and talk the way you talk to me on this program, and by God, they will come to your support, Sam.
Oh, that is so kind. That, you know, because number one, I'm not a politician.
Right.
You know, I'm a human.
Well, that's true.
And I want to be a public servant. You know, I'm a human who wants to go for 3 or 4 years, begin to turn the ship around, and then go to the farm. Like the forefathers thought. I want my civil liberties back.
I
want habeas corpus back. I want to repeal the Patriot Act. This thing, I would encourage everybody to call your senator for this FISA thing. My God, they want to immunize the telecommunications companies.
If they didn't do anything wrong, why do they want to immunize?
I know. These people, you know what, though? This is the neat thing about evil. Yeah. Evil eats itself alive.
Eventually. Yeah.
So I think we're in the eventually part.
Well, as long as the evil perpetrated on us by this Bush administration, the Republican Party, doesn't also devour those of us who don't want to be eaten, if you know what I mean.
So. Well, you know, there are people that have already been devoured.
Yeah, that's true.
And we've got to support them, and we've got to help people, and we've got to just be awake and alive and eat less, consume less. Read more, turn off your television.
And turn on your radio. Sam, thanks so much for coming on the program again. I hope we talk again. Sam with two M's, SamSimpsonForCongress.com. Sam, let us know how it goes, okay?
Bless you, Mike, and Molly, and Ian, and Kathy.
Stay in touch.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, take care, Sam. Check out our website, SamSimpsonForCongress.com. I'm telling you, you spend 5 minutes listening to this woman, you're going to be so damned enthusiastic, you'll go vote for her. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is Nova M Radio. My name is Mike Malloy. Thanks for being here. Let's do some phone calls before we go back to the regularly scheduled format for tonight. Starting with Chris in Maine, who is listening via Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Mike. What's going on?
You are.
I didn't think I was going to get on this fast. I've been listening to you on air. I used to listen to you on Air America a lot.
Yeah, back in the good old days.
Right, and of course, we don't have Air America here in Maine anymore. And I just got Sirius Radio, and you were on there obviously as an affiliate. And I heard your voice, and I had the call.
Well, I'm glad you found the program again. Sirius, XM, the 20 or so stations that carry the program, internet streaming, as long as folks find us. That's pretty much all that matters, because it's a community of like-minded people.
You got me going back in the day when we first got Air American here.
Yeah.
Talking about Reagan and how he started all the busted up the unions and so on and got us to where we are today. And I have a hard time even paying attention anymore to what's going on, because it's too frustrating. So I have to give it up to you, because yeah. You put up with it, and you know.
Well, you are staying involved in the political system, though, right?
Well, I mean, I read books, and I watch the news and stuff. But it got to the point where I got so frustrated with all the books.
Well, you can't, Chris. See, even though you listen on Sirius, you got to be careful about language. And you can't say that, because we originate over the air. But I hear what you're saying. We'll talk again, Chris. When you say a bad word like that, it triggers the bad word button. And once the bad word button is tripped, that means we have to move on. right? I hope you understand. Thanks, Chris. A couple of emails here before we go back to your calls. By the way, the number here is 800-989-1480, so come on, join us. This is a good idea from Mary in Denver regarding the rebate checks and the fact that it's going to jam up the IRS. Mary has an idea how to cut a gazillion rebate checks. She says, Mike, you were so close in describing the IRS's structural inability to issue our much-coveted $600 stimulus geld. Of course, they can't do that while processing our tax returns in April and May. Just take your flawless logic one step further. Mumbai! They have modern computers and check printers, I wager. So outsourcing solves the problem, right? Can you imagine all of your IRS information, that means your social security number, your address, your gender, your this, your that, will now wind up in a database somewhere in Mumbai, India, to be processed there, and some enterprising Mumbaian could probably make an extra chunk of money by saying to someone, hey, listen, I have this amazing database that was given to me, it has all these social security numbers, you want it? Not to insinuate that anybody who works at a call center in Mumbai, India, is going to be that dishonest, right? Let me see what else they got here. This is about the Mike Malloy workout program. We had a couple listeners this week talk about downloading the program, listening to it, listening to podcast, and then how the energy, is that the right word, on this program stimulates them to really do a workout because they get so pissed off. This comes from Finland, Tampere, Finland. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. Mike, in your show a few nights ago, you read a message from one of your listeners about the outstanding benefits in listening to the Mike Malloy Show while working out. I've recently noticed the same thing when I have gone cross-country skiing here in Finland. I just put on my MP3 player with downloaded podcasts of your show, and before I know it, I have got myself some good exercise, having done miles and miles of skiing. There may be something in this workout thing that could even be used in marketing your show. Many thanks also for your show the other night with the segment with Eric Zorn. I think you showed true class and humility. What? In reconsidering your early statements about the Clinton versus Obama debacle. I'm not a huge Obama fan myself, but I do prefer him to Hillary. I couldn't imagine Michael Medved ever doing the same. I have sometimes listened to his show out of curiosity. Mark in Tampere, Finland. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate the email and the thought. Cross-country skiing, huh? I tried that one time, and I hurt for about 3 weeks afterwards and said, no, never again. This one comes from Rick in Minneapolis, who says, don't let them blame Clinton for NAFTA. Rick writes, don't let your callers echo the Republican talking point that Clinton is responsible for NAFTA. The history is as follows. NAFTA was initially pursued pre-1988 by corporate interests in the U.S. and Canada who were supportive of free trade. Negotiations were led by Canadian Prime Minister at the time, Brian Mulroney, U.S. President George Herbert Walker Bush, and the Mexican President, Carlos Salinas de Gortari. NAFTA was an expansion of the earlier Canada-U.S. Free Trade Agreement of 1988. Mexico was introduced into the agreement when passed by Congress in 1993. The vote was 234-200 in the House, 61-38 in the Senate. To characterize NAFTA as a democratic plan is specious. You can only say that Clinton supported the agreement by not vetoing it. Therefore, supporting the will of the people is expressed through the representatives in Washington. And Rick has broken down. Democratic representatives voted 3-2 against NAFTA. Democratic senators voted 3-1 against NAFTA. It was the Republicans who gave the necessary votes. And yeah, I agree. Clinton could have vetoed it. As far as the will of the people, I don't think the American people had a clue as to what NAFTA was going to do. We bought into the lies of at least three presidents and God knows how many senators and members of Congress. And, I completely agree with the idea that we're supposed to educate ourselves and get hip to what these bills are and who's doing what and what this means. And I also know that's a damned impossibility. There is no way in hell. Look, members of Congress half the time don't know what they're voting on. How are you and I supposed to sit down with something like the NAFTA 10, 12, 15 years ago, however long ago it was, about 15 years ago, sit down with that entire, 8 million pages deep, and go through it and then come up and say, oh, Jesus, I don't want this. And then what do? You get on the phone and call your member of Congress and say, hey, yo, don't vote for this. Don't vote for this. And the member of Congress says, what are you talking about? Well, not the member of Congress, but a staffer says, what are you talking about? No, don't vote for this, because if you do, it's going to suck jobs out of America. And the staffer will say, oh, you've been listening to Ross Perot, haven't you? This is a wonderful thing, Mr. Malloy. Don't worry about it. So, you know, how in the hell are we supposed to understand, especially something like NAFTA or GATT or the Central American Trade Agreement, some of these trade agreements, I don't think any of us had a clue as to what any of this meant. Now, I fault Clinton, because Clinton, if anybody in Washington at the time really knew, it was Clinton or Hillary. These are not dumb people. These are policy wonks. They knew. So why didn't Bill Clinton pick up his veto pen and send this piece of filth back to the hell it came from? I would imagine a lot of American jobs would still be here, wouldn't they? Huh? But I get the point. Don't blame Clinton. All right. From Ron in Briarwood, New York, regarding Huckabee, the liar. Hi, Mike. Why has nobody called Huckabee on the huge whopper of a lie he told in last night's debate? Last week, he said that he wanted to, quote, amend the Constitution so it is in God's standards, end quote. And yet last night he said, quote, I certainly would never use the auspices of government to try to push my faith, end quote. I'm convinced that he always has that passive smile on his face to conceal the fact that he's hiding a chainsaw behind his back. Ron in Briarwood, New York. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Back to your phone calls. John is calling from Fairfax, Virginia, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, John.
Yeah, what's up?
You are.
Oh, hey, what's going on, man? Sorry, I wasn't expecting. This Mike?
Yes, it is.
All right. Hey, so, I was calling in. This is the first time I've called into your show. Actually, first time actually being exposed to you, listening here on my radio here on Sirius. And I wanted to discuss with you the possible... I'm curious about the, the economy. You know, they're saying we're going into a downfall and everything. And I've been curious in my thinking and in sort of my own research of how the bankruptcy laws that were passed back then, I think it was 2005, were possibly a main culprit of what's going on with our economy right now.
I think all of these Republican-inspired laws, and the bankruptcy law, I think, was one of those, even though a lot of Democrats voted for it, including Hillary Clinton. It's all interwoven. It's all interconnected. The primary interests of politicians in this country are their corporate backers. The primary interest is the business class or the wealthy class. The primary interest is not the working man or woman. It's not
right.
The middle class man or woman. So Whether or not there was a carefully thought out plan to slam the door on bankruptcy and then start screwing people on mortgages, so on and so forth, I don't think it was a clear cut plan to do that. But the fact that it has materialized that way, I think, is a clear indication that it's the not the working class or the middle class in this country that is the primary concern of these politicians.
Well, I guess where my thinking was leading, and you kind of touched on it right there, was that, you know, with these bankruptcy laws, and yeah, a lot of Democrats did vote for it, and Hillary being one of them. I mean, I know she says that she, you know, didn't vote for the one in 2005, but she did vote for the one in 2001, but she opposed the one in 2005, but she actually didn't, wasn't there to vote yes or no on it.
Right,
which
right.
I don't know if that was a convenience for her or not. But anyways, but the way that it really seems is that after that law was enacted, it basically gave the bank, the credit card companies, I mean, anybody giving out credit to a regular Joe Schmo like me, you know, is able to say, you know what, we can give these guys whatever line of credit we want to.
Right.
Because, you know, when it comes down, especially with these teaser rates that they're giving so many people, once these the rates go up and, you know, and they find out that they're not actually able to get them, because, I mean, how many people want to own their own homes? I mean, they're going to do anything, a lot of people, to own their own homes. I mean, that's, you know, the quote-unquote American dream.
Sure.
These lenders were really given a gimme on. They didn't have to worry about these things being defaulted, or if they were being defaulted, I mean, it would be a lot more strenuous.
Well, you know, I hear what you're saying, John, and to an extent, I agree with you, but I think it's much larger than that. I think you're on the right track, but it's much larger than that. I don't think the lending, the mortgage companies, or the organizations, whatever the hell they were, that put these things together, they didn't care a squat about bankruptcy laws. They were putting together subprime mortgages, thousands of them, and then slicing and dicing them into little pieces and selling them to investors overseas who had no clue as to what was going on back here. But the pitch was, look, here's 1,000 mortgages, 100,000 for each one. So here's a $10 million package. You can buy 5% of it for X amount of dollars. It's an investment, yada, 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 yada. The problem now for a lot of people when they're trying to get out of the mess that these companies put them in is to find out who in the hell holds your mortgage. We know who holds ours. It's our credit union. I would no more go with a mortgage company or a bank 7 years ago when we bought this house than fly to the moon. The credit unions are like the old savings and loans back in It's a Wonderful Life movie. The credit unions, they're in it for the long term. They actually want a mortgage for 30 years. They'll actually charge you 4.5, 4.8, 4.9, 5.1% and make money. And they don't jerk everything around. So part of the problem, if not the major part of the problem with this meltdown in mortgages now is because the whole thing was smoke and mirrors. This was the lending industry or the mortgage industry or the banking industry or the financial industry, I don't even know what the hell you call it anymore, who came up with this nonsense, packaged all of these subprime loans, and then sold them off to people in Indonesia or China or France or Uruguay or wherever. So now the bottom falls out. Who do you go to? Nobody. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Some sound when we come back.
Tell by bloodstained hands. my State of the Union, or state, my speech to the nation, whatever you want to call it.
Whatever you want to call it. Isn't there one coming up? When is it, Monday? Tuesday? Monday? 25 before the hour. Prairie 2 writes about the Mike Malloy workout. He says, the Mike Malloy workout isn't doing it for me. The time I spend in a fetal position under my desk during your show doesn't seem to burn that many calories. On NAFTA, Prairie 2 writes, Clinton did not need to sign NAFTA, nor could he veto it, though he put on a great public show of doing just that. NAFTA was authorized by Congress during George Herbert Walker Bush's presidency and was negotiated by Bush and merely was up for a final vote when Clinton took office. Bush challenged him to complete it, and he did, pushing for it in Congress and taking credit for its passage and holding a completely unnecessary signing ceremony. Yeah, that's right. NAFTA is not a law. It's a treaty, right? It's an agreement, free trade agreement. I am so stupid. But so are some of my listeners. We're just not that bright around the issue of NAFTA. Keep forgetting, it wasn't an act of Congress, so therefore did not require, nor would it, as Prairie 2 said, wouldn't have required, nor could it handle, if that's the right word, a signing by a president or a veto. So Ted, who's also known as Shred, sent this to me yesterday. Questions I'd love to see for Hillary. And the first one here, Ted, Shred, you're in the same joke box as I am. But here's what he wrote. Questions I'd love to see for Hillary. One, as president, what do you intend to do in order to reverse the damaging effect that NAFTA, signed into law by your husband, has done to our economy, labor, and the environment? Yeah, splitting hairs. Prairie 2 is right, as he always is, but I understand what Ted means. Number two, as president, this is addressed to Hillary. As president, what do you intend to do in order to reverse the damaging effect that the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act of 1999, signed into law by your husband, has wrought upon our economy by consolidating power of the insurance, banking, and lending corporations? Number three, as president, what do you intend to do in order to reverse the damaging effect that your husband has done to people's lives by overseeing an administration that imprisoned record amounts of marijuana users and went after doctors who prescribe it? And along these same lines, how do you feel about re-legalizing industrial hemp? And number four, as president, what do you intend to do in order to reverse the damaging effect that the Telecommunications Act of 1996, signed into law by your husband, has had on media ownership diversity and thus free speech? And then Ted adds, regarding these questions I love to see for Hillary, I won't hold my breath. Yeah, good questions, very good questions. And the answer to all of them, of course, is nothing, absolutely nothing. I also got this last night, and I just have to share this with you, because this is kind of fun. It's from Bill in Ottawa, Canada. He writes, "Hi, Mike. Lately, I've been checking the top stories list on Fox News. On a day when human beings with a heart and a mind are thinking about the Nazi tactics in Gaza, the fools who get their news, quote-unquote, from Fox were reading about a naked Sarah Michelle Gellar, whoever she is, and humanoid figures on Mars. Not one, not a single so-called most popular story is remotely important to our society. It's sickening, Mike, truly sickening. Where is Gaza? Where are the 935 lies of Bush? Maybe, just maybe, when the coming war is over and the survivors emerge from the rubble, humanity will see the light. More likely, they will pick up a stick and start beating their neighbor just because he's a Jew or because he's an Arab or because he's an American. I just hope that after we are gone, the dolphins will do a better job. I'm sure they will. Here are the top stories on the 24th on Fox News Channel. NASA photo shows humanoid figure on Mars. Heath's bad habits, worse than thought. Police chief's wife accused of sex, drugs with boys. Tests on rolled up $20 bill found near Heath Ledger's body detect no drug residue. Rising extreme skier dies in Utah cliff jump. Sarah Michelle Gellar bears all in Vaseline ad. Iowa police officer stripped of his duties after traffic stop sex. Heath Ledger found dead in Manhattan residence, sleeping pills discovered in apartment. Pop-Tarts, Sundance devastation, stars react to Heath Ledger's death. Quick-moving blood infection kills 22-year-old college student. Maid's boss is her long-lost father. Boy, 6, with rare allergy, can eat only deer meat. Ringo Starr walks off Regis and Kelly's show over song flap. Marine murder suspect visited relatives in Mexico last week, cousin says. Prisoner kills cellmate for stealing snack cake. And world's greatest dad mug presented as evidence in trial of father accused of killing girl.
My God, how long is their newscast?
Well, these are their top stories on their website. So you click on the link and you can go read all this good stuff. Bill writes, anyway, Mike, this might be an amusing segment for you to do daily or weekly. There will always be lots of fodder. Just imagine the fun we could have. A rock on Mars that looks like a man. Wow, it might be Jesus. Come to kill all the dirty Arabs. Yippee-ki-yay! As always, Bill from Ottawa.
I must say, I was impressed. There was not a single Britney item. And when I was in the store earlier today buying cough drops, every magazine cover, it seemed, was either about Britney or her pregnant sister, like I care.
Back to your phone calls for a moment. Jamal is calling from Minnesota, listening on Sirius. Hey, Jamal.
Hey, how's it going, Mike?
It's moving right along.
I hear you. Just short-time listener, first-time caller. Kind of an independent. And just got a couple quick questions. I mean,
sure.
I listen to both sides, the left and the right. And it honestly seems like just listening to the previous guest you had. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. You know, she brought up the Patriot Act, and just a minute ago, somebody was talking about the 931 lives of Bush, and you got political crap from both sides of the aisle. I mean, both sides of the political spectrum spin their own games, and it just seems like, with the 931 lies, let's count up every politician's lies. I mean, we couldn't even count that high, you know. And with the
let me interrupt. The 935 lies that were documented by the Center for Public Integrity were lies specifically targeted to taking this country into a war that has so far cost the lives of up to 1 million Iraqis and 4,000 Americans. So, yes, politicians lie. So do preachers. So do rabbis. So do lawyers. So do gas station attendants and car mechanics. So what's your point?
Exactly.
What's your point?
The point is...
You can't offset 935 lies told by the Bush administration to take us into war. You can't offset that, Jamal. I can't, anyway. Let me rephrase it. I've changed the pronoun. I can't offset that
no,
by saying...
No, I'm not trying to offset it.
I can't offset it by saying, well, all politicians lie, or put it in a proper perspective, Mike. Now, as far as what you started out with, people on the left and people on the right say this and say that, that may be true, but I don't understand... Where I think what you're trying to do is find equality, like the teeter-totter is in perfect balance, that the liars on the left are the same as the liars on the right. And that's not true. If I lie and say it's 11 o'clock here in the East Coast, that's a lie. But if I say You know, I need you to pick up a gun and go fight because the Arabs are going to come and attack all of our women and children. That's different from telling you that it's 11 o'clock at night. So don't tell me every lie is the same. It is not.
Well, wait. Receiving information and giving out false information is totally different from lying. I don't know whether, if you look at intelligence reports from around the world, everybody around the world, for the most part, said that Saddam was trying to develop weapons of mass destruction.
That's because they believed the lies we put out. And what you're saying Jamal, I'll put you on hold. I swear to God, I'll put you on hold. I can't put him on hold. Just put him on hold. I'm not going to allow someone to overtalk me on my own program. That's not going to happen. All the intelligence agencies around the world did not say Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. The UN inspectors said he did not. The intelligence agencies that didn't have a dog in that fight, Jamal, realized the lies being put out by the Americans and the Brits. So I'm going to end the conversation now, Jamal, because I just don't feel like wasting my time going over things that you should know, that I should know, that everybody should know. All the intelligence agencies around the world did not say Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. The fact is, Jamal, that essentially only two or three did, and those were two or three that supported the American position. And the American position was based on lies, filthy lies that have now cost the lives of up to a million people. So I'm sorry, Jamal. I really have a hard time dealing with somebody who tries to find parity or equality between the so-called lies of the left and the lies of the right. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Involves Saddam Hussein because of the nature of Saddam Hussein and his willingness to terrorize himself.
Yeah! He gets my picture out of the New York Times the other day and he had it blown up and he put it in the bathroom and every time he looks at it, he terrorizes himself. Jesus, this man is stupid. From today, the White House press briefing with too much cappuccino Perino in previewing his Monday State of the Union speech. Old Lava Lips here promises that Bush will sprint to the finish. He's going to sprint to the finish. If he sprints as well as he rides a bicycle or chews a pretzel or maneuvers the Segway, then maybe we should all be worried or watch to see him sprint up to the podium on State of the Union night. Wouldn't that be funny?
The speech is focused on the future. It is not a review of the first 7 years of his time as president. It will reflect the president's mindset that he is going to sprint to the finish, as you have all heard him say before. The speech also highlights unfinished business that should be priorities for Democrats in Congress eager to demonstrate to voters back home that they are able to get things done, such as the economic growth package and making sure our intelligence professionals have the tools they need to do the job to protect us. These two issues are currently on the front burner waiting for congressional action.
The tools they need to do the job to protect us. Well, Lava Lips, those tools are there. They have been there since the since 1787. All the tools are there. What you're talking about, of course, is to give Bush the tools to continue to violate the law. So basically, what Lava Lips is saying is Bush will push tax cuts and his need to snoop on Americans through FISA as he sprints to the finish. Here's a little more from Too Much Cappuccino Perino.
He will highlight recent successes in Iraq and the troops that are returning home without replacement as a result of that success.
Uh-huh.
He will call on Congress to make sure that our troops have what they need, when they need it, for the mission they've been asked to do. On the foreign policy front, he will discuss how an agreement between Palestinians and Israelis would help foster peace in the Middle East, and that peace is now a real possibility. Yesterday he said he said that he's put all of his soul and all of his might into being president and that this year will be no exception.
On the foreign policy front, he will discuss how an agreement between Palestinians and Israelis would help foster peace in the Middle East. Really? And that peace is now a real possibility. Does this crazy broad ever even read a newspaper? Dana, Gaza has erupted. People are dying. The wall between Egypt and Gaza, built by the Israelis, has been broken, whatever the hell. Dana, there's no peace. It's not a real possibility. It's not even a probability. You're talking about the Middle East, Dana. You're talking about the Israelis and the Palestinians. Are you out of your blonde mind? Now, the reporters had a chance to ask questions, which focused on the debate over the economic stimulus package. Reporter says, on the economic stimulus package, Dana, some economists have expressed concern that the package won't be effective. Is the White House convinced that this package, as it stands, will in fact give the economy a boost?
This president would not have taken the advice of his economic advisors to, first of all, agree to do an economic growth package, and secondly, to agree to what Secretary Paulson was able to work out if he didn't think it was going to be effective. This is for the president called it an insurance policy, and that's how he sees it this morning. There's no change over the past 8 hours, and we want to see quick congressional action.
Ah, come on, give me a break. He doesn't know the difference between a budget and a bagel. Oh, my God! He wouldn't agree if he didn't think it was going to be effective. Going to be what is going to be effective? Somebody ought to ask Bush, hey, what is in your economic stimulus package? Come on, quick. What is there? And, of course, he would give them that withering look that says, you little rotten bastard. What newspaper are you from? You want to have an orange jumpsuit on, don't you? Don't you know who I am? What's in the economic package? Here's a hint, Bush. It doesn't have a cream cheese filling. She says this president would not have taken the advice of his economic advisors. Dana, what choice does he have? Bush is a moron whose only action is to take advice from advisors who give him advice to whom he listens. Haven't you ever heard him say that, Dana? Oh, my God. Stick around. There's one more. There's one more from Too Much Cappuccino Perino. And then we have some sound bites from the raving maniacs who showed up for the Republican debate last night. You're going to love these. Stay just a little bit longer. This is the Nova M Radio Network. We'll be right back.
and the sound make together. It's the music to the story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon me now.
Welcome back. About 7 past the hour on the Malloy program. And not on the Malloy program. It's 7 past the hour. Let's go back to one more here from Too Much Cappuccino Perino at today's White House briefing. All about Chucklenuts's perhaps final State of the Union address on Monday. No, I think he has one more, doesn't he? No? When do the regimes shift? Oh, January 9th? Okay. So in the press briefing today, finally, this reporter asked a natural question about the so-called stimulus package. How does what Mensa Man calls an insurance plan ever get paid for? In other words, how many millions of dollars of future debt does this burden our children and grandchildren with? Because this is supposed to be, what, $150 billion stimulus package or something? So the reporter says, Dana, some Americans, when looking at the stimulus package, will say, how does a government already in debt find this money? And they seem to fear that this is just something else their children will have to pay back with interest at some point. How does this money happen?
So what the president wants to do is make sure the economy remains strong so that we can continue to get this country on a path to balance by 2012. We'll have the budget out on February 4th. And so that the president believes it's important that we continue to have a growing economy. There was a risk of a downturn, the president said, along with the members of Congress. Let's move forward and try to get a stimulus package so that we can avert that. And we do see a short-term increase in the deficit, but we think that will be overcome by the economic growth that we'll benefit from.
See, how come you can't come back to some two-bit shill like Dana Perino or Scott McClellan or Ari Fleischer or any of these people? Come back to them 6 months later when the proof of their asinine statement is there for everyone to see and restate the question and present the proof of their asinine statement, huh? Like Bush cares what happens in 2012. Oh, please. Another email here. I got a bunch on NAFTA. Oh, my God, they just keep coming. This is from MDM. He says, Mike, the Constitution states that the president, quote, shall have power by and with the advice and consent of the Senate to make treaties provided two-thirds of the senators present concur, end quote. Would it not be true if Bill Clinton simply did not sign NAFTA, it would not have been made law? What am I missing? MDM, I don't know. You know, I'm as confused about how NAFTA became the agreement that it is ever since it happened. I have no idea. I don't. Who wrote this? Here's another one. Vicky? Yeah, Vicky. Mike, I don't believe NAFTA is a treaty. NAFTA is an agreement on issues of investment between countries. I suspect that it is an expansion of the 1983 La Paz Agreement that was signed by Ronald Reagan. The La Paz Agreement was ostensibly designed to allow the U.S. and Mexico to work together on environmental issues in the border region. The agreement was written in such an open-ended way that it could be expanded simply by agreement between the parties. And then she lists a couple of links. Okay, it's not a law, it's not a treaty, it's an agreement. All right, well, I'm not making fun of anybody. I have no idea. I don't know what it is. I don't know why it's there. I just wish we all would have listened to the one sane thing Ross Perot ever said, that there would be a sucking sound, and that sound would be the jobs leaving America if NAFTA became the rule of law, the law of the land, the treaty, the agreement, the whatever. I remember Al Gore sitting there saying, no, it won't. All right, from the Florida debate last night, media whore number one, Tim Russert, was this on MSNBC? Yeah, he was one of the moderators. I guess there was more than one. Russert asked if the war in Iraq was worth the cost in blood and money. McCain here blames Rumsfeld for an otherwise lovely war. Seems McCain still thinks Saddam had weapons, even though the Bush crime family has admitted no such weapons existed. Well, at least this time, insane John McCain didn't call Saddam President Putin
It was worth getting rid of Saddam Hussein. He had used weapons of mass destruction, and it's clear that he was hell-bent on acquiring them. The problem was not the invasion of Iraq. The problem was the mishandling of Iraq for nearly 4 years by Rumsfeld. And again, I railed against that. I was criticized by Republicans. There were others that called for a phased or secret withdrawal. The war in Iraq is justified because of the threat of Saddam Hussein. It was the mishandling of the war. Now we're on the right track. Now we are succeeding. And if we withdraw, and if we decide that we have to get out of there, I guarantee you Al-Qaeda will be trumpeting to the world that they have defeated the United States of America.
Senator, my question is, was the war a good idea, worth the price in blood and treasure?
It was a good idea. It was not worth the failures that happened, but it is worth it at the end of the day, because we will have peace and success in the Middle East, and our men and women will return with honor, and they won't have to go back and fight Al-Qaeda there.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. What is this? He says, I guarantee you, if we decide that we have to get out of there, Al-Qaeda will be trumpeting to the world that they have defeated the United States of America. You mean like the Vietnamese do now? What difference does it make? I can sit here, McCain, and say, you're a psychopathic old bastard that couldn't find your ass with both hands. So what? It doesn't mean you are or you can't. You're afraid Al-Qaeda will be telling the world they've defeated the U.S., so let's stay there and drench some more blood in that godforsaken crap hole that we created because of our invasion, because of our support of Saddam back when he was fighting the Iranians? Oh God. Here's Ron Paul's turn at bat. Russert summarizes, Congressman Paul, was the war a good idea, worth the blood and treasure that we have spent?
It's very, very interesting the way you put that question.
No, that's the wrong guy. That's the wrong guy.
When the polls were six.
That's the wrong guy. That's the psychopathic I don't know who it was. To hell with it. All right, Ron Paul. Here's Ron.
It was a very bad idea, and it wasn't worth it. The Al-Qaeda wasn't there then. They're there now. There were no weapons of mass destruction. Had nothing to do with 9/11. There was no aggression. This decision on policy was made in 1998 under the previous administration because they called for the removal of Saddam Hussein. It wasn't worth it. And it's a sad story because we started that war, and we should never be a country that starts war needlessly.
Too bad Ron Paul is backed by open racists and privatization freak neo-libertarians, because this is the only sensible answer to the question, the one he gave. Now, Mike Huckabee then answered, let me see if Mike Huckabee, he answers the question. And surprisingly, he didn't suggest that the Constitution should be rewritten so that only the Almighty God could declare war.
I supported the president when he led us into this, as did the Democrats. And I think we owe him not a lot of scorn. We owe him our thanks that he had the courage to recognize there was a potential of weapons of mass destruction. And rather than wait until we had another attack, he went and made sure that it wasn't going to happen from Saddam Hussein. Now everybody can look back and say, oh, well, we didn't find the weapons. Doesn't mean they weren't there. Just because you didn't find every Easter egg didn't mean that it wasn't planted.
What?
My point is that when the president acted, this country was united in believing it was a necessary thing to do. It's easy to second-guess a president. Whoever of us is elected will be second-guessed too, but I hope we have the courage and the resolve, once we commit to something, to make sure that we don't back away just because the polls say we should.
Oh, my God. This guy is crazier than McCain. He says, my point is that when the president acted, this country was united in believing it was a necessary thing to do. Yeah, you dumbass, because we had all been fed lies. Why is that so hard for these people to understand? Mr. Let's change the Constitution to be more Christ-like, you freak. Get out of here. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shed? You will find the bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean sheds to play around with.
Any big idea? Jesus, can you take the time? Throw a drowning man a line, peace on earth. To tell the ones who hear no sound, whose sons are living in the ground, peace on earth.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Of all the asinine comments last night by these unbelievably sociopathic Republicans. I think Huckabee's really, we're going to play it again. He says that we owe Bush not a lot of scorn. We owe him our thanks that he had the courage to recognize there was a potential of weapons of mass destruction. What the hell is Huckabee talking about? And then he says, when the president acted, this country was united in believing it was a necessary thing to do. What? United? We had anti-war demonstrations before this sorry bastard launched his attack and occupation that rivaled anything that occurred 3 years into the Vietnam War. 10 million people around the globe demonstrated against this lying BS. And here in the United States, I can remember standing in some pretty damn cold weather with about 300,000 other people who said no. What the hell is Huckabee? Huckabee, you need to go back and read your Bible. Just go find a church somewhere in East Elbow, Arkansas, and preach, brother. Preach, okay? Not that you have a chance of doing anything as a president. Here, just listen to him again. Listen to this again. Huckabee.
I supported the president when he led us into this, as did the Democrats. And I think we owe him not a lot of scorn. We owe him our thanks that he had the courage to recognize there was a potential of weapons of mass destruction.
Amen.
And rather than wait until we had another attack, he went and made sure that it wasn't going to happen from Saddam Hussein. Now everybody can look back and say, oh, well, we didn't find the weapons. Doesn't mean they weren't there.
Easter eggs.
Just because you didn't find every Easter egg didn't mean that it wasn't planted. My point is that when the president acted,
God,
this country was united in believing it was a necessary thing to do. It's easy to second guess a president.
Easter
Whoever
eggs.
Whoever of us is elected will be second guessed too. But I hope we have the courage and the resolve, once we commit to something, to make sure that we don't back away just because the polls say we should.
Once you commit to something like, say, making birth control illegal or putting the Bible in the classroom instead of the Constitution, is that what you mean, Huckleberry? Just because you didn't find every Easter egg doesn't mean it wasn't planted. What? Just because you don't see hoof prints on your roof doesn't mean Santa wasn't there. And just because there's no visible straitjacket around you doesn't mean you're not crazier than Rumsfeld with a new laser pointer. Where the hell do these people come from? And Huckabee just gets a pass. Somebody like Dennis Kucinich is totally ignored. And Huckabee is right out there on the stage talking his biblical horse feathers and talking about how the country was united. Yeah, Huck, we all wanted to go to war, didn't we? Yeah, kill the sons of bitches. Giuliani. We got time to squeeze him in before the break? Sure. Rudy then answered the same question about Iraq. Media whore number one, Tim Russert, said, Mayor Giuliani... Mayor Giuliani, was the war a good idea and worth the price in blood and treasure?
It's very, very interesting that the way you put that question is with a poll. Because when the polls were 6 and 7 out of 10 Americans thinking it was a good idea, Hillary Clinton was in favor of the war. And now when the polls are 6 out of 10 are against, Hillary Clinton is against the war.
What does Rudy Giuliani think?
I was for it when 6 out of 10 were for it. I'm for it when 6 out of 10 are against it. I'm for it not because of polls, but because America is in a war, an Islamic terrorist war against us.
Woo!
America has to succeed in Iraq, and the goal in Iraq is an Iraq that's stable and an ally of the United States. And to be president of the United States You have to be able to read polls, but you can't have them push you around.
The goal in Iraq is an Iraq that's stable and an ally of the United States. Mr. Mayor, you're out of your freaking mind, aren't you? You really are, you gibbering clown. You know, I like Giuliani when he dresses up in drag and dances. You know, put on those pumps, put on those silver stockings. Come on, Rudy. Kind of turns me on. We really get right down to it. Put on that blonde wig. Slap on that real kind of bright red Chicago-style makeup. And let's go dancing. Huh? You want to go dance? But as far as you being president? I was for it when 6 out of 10 Americans were for it. I'm for it when 6 out of 10 Americans are against it. I'm for it if 6 out of 10 Martians want to come here. I'm for it whenever the olive groves drop dead. I'm for it when the tin cans are 6 out of 10 because of that. 9-11, 9-11, 9-11. I'm Rudy Giuliani, 9-11. They would have hit us again. They would have hit us again. You know, they hit us the first time. They would have. All those desert jockeys, they came roaring out of the desert. They did. Took our airplanes. Hit us. Yeah, I was there. I was the mayor. Mm-hmm. I had everything in control. 9-11. 9-11, 9-11. 9-11, 9-11, 9-11. Saving the most boring till last. We have one more for you, and it's Willard Romney. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Year ago today, the time for excuse making has come to an end.
Oh yeah. Twenty-five before the hour. All right. Before we go to Mittens, Romney. Before we go to Mittens, Romney, for our last comment from the Florida Republican debate last night, I have another email here regarding NAFTA. Oh, God, it's from Prairie 2 again. All right, let's try it one more time. Trade agreements are a hybrid of treaties and bills of law. Because of the Senate's history of not approving treaties with a two-thirds vote, a law was passed decades ago allowing Congress to authorize the president to negotiate agreements on trade, which then are approved by both houses of Congress by a simple majority vote. This method of creating trade agreements has also been incorporated into GATT, the General Agreement on Trade and Tariffs, which makes it enforceable as a treaty law. Under the Constitution, treaties are the law of the land, and under international law, trade agreements carry the same weight as treaties. Basically, we are no longer a nation state by treaty. This is why the extreme right goes nuts over NAFTA, GATT, etc. And they are right if we let the Bush crime family get away with it. I have no idea. The subject line says NAFTA made simple. Well, no, not really. Okay. No more NAFTA notes from anybody now. Okay? Please, no more. NAFTA. All right, here's Mittens. It was Romney's turn at the question from media whore number one, Tim Russert. And he had had time to think about his answer. The question was the Iraq War worth the blood and treasure? The blood and treasure. So after all this time to think about it, Romney, old Mittens, gives an answer here that sounds sort of like insane McCain.
It was the right decision to go into Iraq. I supported it at the time. I support it now. It was not well managed in the after the takedown of Saddam Hussein and his military. That was done brilliantly, an extraordinary success. But in the years that followed, it was not well. We were undermanaged, underprepared, underplanned, understaffed, and then we came into the phase that we have now. The plan that President Bush and General Petraeus put together is working. It's changing lives there. And perhaps most importantly, it's making sure that Al-Qaeda and no other group like them is becoming a superpower, if you will, in the communities and having a safe haven from which they launch attacks against it.
Oh, for Christ's sake. I get so sick of this. It was not, well, what do you call it? After the takedown of Saddam? This was not college wrestling, you dumbass. The takedown? And then he says the plan that President Bush and General Petraeus put together is working. Bush and Petraeus? Hey, Mittens, didn't Bush say he didn't have a clue? He would leave it up to, you know, the generals? And Mittens says it's changing lives there? Yeah. To the extent that death changes your life, yeah, it really does. Or extreme poverty or watching your country go down the toilet after it's being blown into a million pieces, changing lives? Watching your children having their arms blown off? You sick son of a bitch? You have the audacity to say things like that? All of you right-wingers, all of you Republicans. And perhaps most importantly, he says it's making sure that Al-Qaeda doesn't become a superpower. What? What you mean like Russia or Japan? Oh my God.
Now let me get this straight. The Al-Qaeda that he's worried about that might become a superpower, they have no state or nation or government or organization.
I wish somebody would just tell Romney to go where's he from? Michigan. Just go back to Michigan. No, he was governor of Massachusetts. How did the people of Massachusetts elect this guy?
No currency, no constitution, and they rely basically on shaky videotape.
I'm going to get a big sign that says, Romney, go home.
Mittens.
Willard. Wasn't Willard the name of the rat? The boy's name wasn't Willard. It was the rat, wasn't it? Yeah. Willard Mitt Romney. And they call him Mitt, I understand, because his little sister couldn't pronounce Willard. So she said, say Willard.
Mitt!
Good. Say Willard.
Mitt!
Oh, that'll, yeah. Say it again. Say Willard.
Mitt!
So there you have it, the some of the highlights or the lowlights from, and sure, I'll admit, Ron Paul was the only one that made a sensible statement about that issue. About that issue, Ron Paul and I are soul brothers. We will sit down and eat a plate of chitlins together. We are so close on that issue. We will eat greens and ham hocks. We are soul brothers down to the soul. We will eat cornbread dipped into that mess. We will eat fried chicken, and we will do it together. Ron Paul and moi, where it concerns the Iraq adventure. Anything beyond that, get away from me, you psychopath. Back to your phone calls. Jean is calling from San Francisco, listening on the internet. Hey, Jean.
Oh, hi.
Oh, hi.
Well, you know what? On the delay here, all of a sudden you just say, hi, you just cut into what you're saying on the internet.
Is that what it is?
Whoa, hi there.
Oh, that's right. Listen, you know, we're on the Quake now, or Green, what's it called? Green 960?
at 9 o'clock, it's still delayed.
Yeah, it's still delayed. It's the whole show is delayed, but it's no longer. You don't have to listen at 1 o'clock in the morning. So, but anyway, that's not why you called. I'm sorry.
Oh no, it isn't, because I was all stirred up last night about what you talked about Congress taking back the $695 billion military appropriations bill after Bush returned it to them. He was in a panic.
Yes.
Well, I just couldn't forget about the whole lead up to Christmas. Remember how Bush was dramatically demanding that Congress pass this bill to him before the holiday recess to give it to him like a Christmas present.
God.
Yeah, and then he even threatened that there might be some sort of stopping paying people at the Pentagon or something, and the Congress would be responsible for this terrible thing. But when he opened that bill finally, he must have screamed, because it had that Section 1083 in it that you talked about last night that allowed for suing Iraq for reparations of victims of Saddam Hussein via the U.S. Iraq's U.S. bank accounts.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's where I started going down the rabbit hole, because it was like, I think he was more panicked about the bank accounts than about any legal suits for reparation.
Well, sure.
because remember, Bush's family laundered money to give to Hitler's cause back in the 1920s through 1941. They are criminal money laundering shell game players par excellence.
That's right.
So I think that's what this was all about. And the other suspicious thing is that Bush's veto was not actually a veto somehow. He just sent the bill back without saying he vetoed it.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, somebody posted that at Daily Coast. I don't know the technicalities of it, but I think Bush doesn't want to be held responsible for stopping the bill, but he wanted to put this deletion technically on the Congress alone.
And so the Democratic Party leadership said, okay, that's all right. You don't have to veto it. No, just send it back. We'll give you what you want. We'll give you what you want. What do you want?
Just so
Jesus,
awful.
I hate these people. Oh, well. Well, I think you're right about the banking aspect of it. The Bush crime family is and always has been about get the money, show me the money, where's the money? Why, as you point out, going all the way back to Prescott Bush, who, like Henry Ford and Charles Lindbergh and the people that ran DuPont Chemical Company, they all wanted an alliance with Hitler. They didn't want anything to do with this, these communists, these Jews, they wanted an alliance with Hitler and were determined to finance him, and did for the longest time. I hate these people. I hate them. I hate them, Gene. Oh, well, but you know that, right? All right.
But I think they're going down. I think so.
I hope. I hope. Hey, thanks for checking in. Is it time for a break? Barry writes in regarding the rat movie. My memory says the boy is Willard, and the main rats are Socrates and Ben. Wasn't there a song about Ben? There was a song about the rat. Oh, I don't know. He just... he's weird. Willard, not Barry. That's for Paula in Bayonne, New Jersey, and she knows why.
Now it's
10 before the hour, Lance in Manhattan writes, Mike Huckabee needs to finish the sentence. The country was united because of a massive, deliberate misinformation program by the corporate media designed to convince the people that Iraq was a threat to the United States and had a role in 9/11. Which is exactly the point of studying the lies told, because these liars tricked the sheeple to go along with butchering innocent Iraqis to appease our bloodlust for 9/11 revenge and coincidentally help all of the corporations that own our government. Support the troops! Get them killed in a war based on misinformation and corporate profits. Thanks to the crew for tonight and this entire week, ladies. So I appreciate it. Ian Huff, who engineered the program and answered your calls. Billy Foster, our technical director. Ben Birch, the podcast manager. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. And Catherine Bay, our executive producer. Did I say thank you, ladies? Whatever. Deborah is calling from Long Island, listening on the internet. Hey, Deborah.
Hey, Mike. Shout out to you and Molly.
Thank you.
And Kathy. Hope you guys are great. And by the way, in New York, we say, what the huck? I mean, we don't get him at all.
Yeah, here in the South, we don't get him in the South. Well, some of us don't get him in the South, but what the huck?
Yeah. And that young guy that called up that got kicked off the air, I know what that's like when we didn't hear you for so long. Why it took him so long to find you, I don't know. But when you were gone from Air America, it was really bad for us.
Yeah, it was bad. It was bad for me too. I don't mind getting unemployment checks. It's just what you have to do to get them, you know.
Yeah, not nice. No,
it was awful.
Sitting out there with your gun, protecting the young. Right. And also, I just want to say that no longer is my hair on fire. It's completely singed off.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all gone.
Can't take it anymore. I can't.
You know, you sound a lot like Randy Rhodes if Randy Rhodes used Valium.
Oh, but she's way too Democratic for me. She's still supporting it. I don't know why.
No, but you sound, well, she's from Long Island, I think. So you sound a lot like Randy.
Queens.
Yeah.
Mike, thanks.
Yes, yes.
Thanks for everything. We really adore you.
Well, that's very kind.
And thanks for Kathy, and I hope Molly's well.
Molly has just one hell of a cold.
She always has these colds.
Yeah, I know. Well, she goes to preschool.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, she's it's like going to a petri dish every day, and she brings this stuff home. But yeah, she's been in the studio here tonight. We have the cot out so that Molly can sleep because she's running like 102.5, Kathy. 101.5.
Oh, I met you guys when you came up and did a show for Air America, and you had Molly with you, and you were trying to find a cot or something for her to stay in the studio.
I know. We broke down and went out and bought one.
And carried it home on the plane.
There you go.
Thank you.
All right, well, Deborah, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. What the huck? Gary is calling from Maryland, listening on the internet. Hey, Gary.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Okay, great. I think the Clintons are going to finally get what they want with their ruthless bloodlust for the White House. I think what's going to happen is they're going to go in there, and the Republicans are already starting. They're going to blame NAFTA for all the job losses since, you know, Bill Clinton signed it. And this videotape of Bill Clinton being a war hawk from 1999 saying that they should go in and invade Saddam. So they're going to drop the war right on Hillary Clinton. And, you know, it just seems to me it's going to be a perfect storm. I think the Democrats are just doing exactly what they always do. And I just really, at this point, I highly doubt I'm going to vote Democratic in the election.
How are you going to vote? You're going to vote Green or Socialist
well,
or what?
Well, if Edwards or Obama or somebody was to go independent,
mm-hmm.
I would go that way because we really need a new start.
Yeah. I'm just so drifting around to that way of thinking too.
Yeah, and I remember I used to listen to you on IE a long time ago, and you said we really need a 30-year plan.
Yeah,
and I think long term we really have to look at something fresh. If they're in a Democratic Party, they need to really look at something fresh, more long term. But anyway, I'm gonna let you go. I know you got a lot of colors. Molly, get well.
I hear you. Thanks, Gary. Thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it. Take care. John is calling from Miami, listening on the internet. Hey, John.
Thanks, Mike.
just every time these right-wing candidates open their mouths makes me question what dimension they're from.
I hear you.
But that's not what I wanted to talk about. Real quick, this blonde bimbo of a press secretary.
Is she a piece of work or what?
Oh my God.
God, legally bland.
But let me tell you something about her. She's actually on record as not being aware of the Bay of Pigs incident.
Oh, I know. Absolutely.
So you know, obviously the prerequisite for being the press secretary in the Bush administration is not having a high school history class.
That's right.
And
Well, you know, Bush said it himself. You know, all that stuff from way back there, gee, that's almost irrelevant.
Yeah. It's horrible. Really disgusting, and it's insulting is what it is, just daily, on a daily basis.
I hear you.
But anyway, that's all I had to say.
All right, thanks,
John. Keep up the good work.
All right, sir, thank you. Appreciate you checking in. We're out of time. That's it. I'll see you all Monday. All right, take care. Have a good weekend. You know, be safe and all that kind of stuff. Take care, all right? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.
I'm going straight to hell, just like my mama said. I'm going straight to hell.
Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.